And Patrice has got the magic touch here today. Janu Park on our staff is on the phone right now. And he's the only person on the phone. I didn't actually get a message or anything from Dave, so, but before we kind of get into the agenda, one thing I wanted to just kind of flag a few dates coming up. So again, there was email traffic on this, but we moved our, from July 3rd, we moved the meeting that had been scheduled for July 3rd up to June 26th, Wednesday, June 26th, 10 a.m. So just kind of moved it up a week, but I just want to again flag that change that was made. And then we also moved what was going to be the early August meeting, which is always a you know, stretch for folks, a little bit earlier to July 31st, Wednesday, July 31st. So again, there was email traffic on this. I updated the calendar invites, but I just want to kind of orally say that again.
And I will not be here for the July 31st.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, and look, you know, it's summertime. So in general, I realize people have a lot going on and a little going on. It's a catch-up period for everyone. Our July 8th is the deadline for the kind of remaining comments on kind of the big package, the big update. If in this coming month, so we have, you know, this June 26th meeting, advisory group meeting, that might be a last chance where, like, look, you've kind of got your comments mostly together, you have a few little miscellaneous things you want to talk about, great. We've got that whole meeting kind of available for discussions. Also, again, just put out to everybody, you know, email me and we can try to set up a time to meet with staff. I would kind of say, like, that's often most productive if you can give us a heads up, like if there are particular issues, so that, you know, as you know, there's a lot of material, and for us to kind of come in and be like, oh yes, that one phrase on page, you know, 32 of document 5, and you know, that case, we're not always able to kind of respond super quickly. So if you have a meeting you want to have, give us a little heads up, as much info as you can about, like, you know, things you want to discuss. Yeah. That said, on calendaring, I don't think I have any other announcements. So moving on to the agenda, one thing I wanted to do, since Janu's actually calling in from an airport elsewhere, I wanted to see if there were any pressing questions that would jump the queue. We could jump the queue while he's on the phone with us, about particularly the homicide provisions. I think, again, we can follow up separately, and unless it's really pressing, I'd just assume do that so we can have Janu kind of more present with his materials and everything instead of on the fly. But in case there was something very urgent, I wanted to kind of, you know, open that door. If not, then we'll go to kind of the first thing on the agenda, the comments we received last. Once the strange faces kind of dissipate, I'll move forward. Good.
Going.
All right. Good. Dave, welcome. Oh, Paul. Hello. Good. So what I was just checking in on was whether anybody had any very kind of quick comments. Right now we have Janu on the phone, who's kind of our homicide lead person. And so I wanted to jump the queue because he's going to have to drop off the phone. If there was anything urgent on that, that kind of is very urgent, he'll be back in the office tomorrow. Frankly, we can follow up then. But anything super urgent on that regard for on a homicide, anything at this point, I assume not, but just check. Okay. Great. Okay. So Janu, you are off the hook. Feel free to, you know, when you need to, go ahead and drop off.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. So then we'll move on to the comments that we received back on the long-winded piece, but basically Chapter 3, right, of the Revised Criminal Code. And I have the comments up on the screen. We received two sets of comments from USAO and OAG. And I'm going to hand it over to Michael to kind of talk through some things that occurred to us. But then, as usual, like, look, there are a few things we wanted to follow up on, but then also wanted to open it up and see if you have further questions or wanted to have a group discussion about any aspects. So, turn over to Michael.
Yeah, so I want to thank everyone for their comments. It was really helpful, a lot of helpful recommendations, things that, you know, we're going to accept, and, you know, which I think improve the legislation. From our perspective today, there's just really one thing that we wanted to ask about, and that had to do with U.S. Attorney's Office's comments on the culpability of general inchoate crimes. The questions we have are kind of the same across, but I think just for discussion purposes, it's worth just focusing on attempt. You know, the sort of bottom line recommendation of a few of the different recommendations the U.S. Attorney's Office has offered is to basically have a single phrase with the intent to engage in conduct constituting the offense, articulate the sole culpable mental state requirement for general inchoate crimes for attempt. And we just want, you know, from our perspective, we weren't fully clear as to what the U.S. Attorney's Office had envisioned in terms of the substantive policies that relate to the resultant circumstance elements of the target offense. And so we were just curious as to whether you all might be able to provide us with a little bit more specificity in terms of what you had in mind and how that would operate.
Can you clarify that?
Sure. Yeah, so,
and I have on the screen just like the kind of the intro piece where they kind of note, right, here's how it would look, you know, with this change. And again, this is for attempt. There were some parallel changes for conspiracy and solicitation that were very similar in nature, but just so you kind of see what it would look like up there. Yeah,
yeah, so the question is, right, so when you charge an attempt to commit offense, you know, it's an attempt to commit a target offense. That offense will have result or circumstance elements. For example, recklessly killing someone with negligence that they're, you know, 65 years or older. And I guess what we were trying to understand is through this language, how, if at all, the mental states governing the target offense would or would not change when charged as an attempt?
Well, I mean, the whole point of engaging is in the attempt is that you come dangerously close to engaging in the target offense.
Right.
Sorry, I think I'm still just not fully understanding.
Sure. So maybe
should I pull up the full kind of the current RCC language? Maybe that would be helpful to kind of talk about.
Maybe. Well, look,
so in terms of getting rid of the planning aspect, I think the planning just kind of adds in an additional element that is not required under the current attempt. And I mean, I think under the current attempt statutes, there are kind of two different attempts. There's a true attempt and then kind of a legal fiction attempt.
Right.
Frankly, both are relied upon frequently, appropriately.
Right.
For, you know, kind of a true attempt, I think for both of them, planning to engage in it is not an element.
Sure.
And I think that, as we kind of set out, that adds an additional element that's not required as part of it. You know, that kind of gives it almost a premeditation, which
sure.
I think there's no premeditation requirement in most underlying offenses, so that just adds an additional element to it
sure.
that's required in either one of those theories.
So what's the mens rea that you think is appropriate?
That they intend to engage in conduct constituting that offense. I mean, I think that's what we propose.
So let me give you an example, okay? So you have a demolition operator mm-hmm. who is about to destroy a building, and unbeknownst to the demolition operator, an elderly homeless person has snuck into that building and are now living in that building. Mm-hmm. The demolition operator is about to destroy the building when someone phones the police to let them know that there's actually an elderly homeless person in the building. Mm-hmm. And so they stop the demolition operator from pulling the lever that would destroy the building, thereby saving the elderly homeless person's life. Had the police not intervened, that elderly homeless person would have died. Okay? It seems to me that right, so I think we'd all agree that this demolition operator is not culpable, has done nothing wrong. Or, you know, we can even stipulate that, right, that, you know, he followed all the regulations and it was just that someone snuck in the last minute. But it seems to me that in that situation, you could say that the demolition operator had the intent to engage in the conduct that would constitute murder or any form of homicide. And the reason being is that the demolition operator had the intent to pull the lever, which, when released, would have killed the person. And so that's why, from our understanding, the with intent to engage in the conduct refers to conduct, but it says nothing about the results or the circumstances, for example, that death would occur, which is the result element, not the conduct constituting the offense, but the result, or the circumstance, that the victim had been over the age of 65, which is not conduct, but the circumstance. So we're trying to understand is, based on that language, it's unclear to us whether the culpability requirement governing the target offense, so let's say that person is charged with reckless homicide, reckless manslaughter, whether the government would not have to prove any culpable mental state, so it would be kind of a strict liability.
But changing that to the word planning does not change the issue, because that operator still was planning to pull the lever. So planning does not...
You're right. That's a separate
completely
issue.
Agree. What I'm getting at here is, so the U.S. Attorney's Office made two recommendations.
Right.
One was to delete a clause which says, with the culpability required by the target offense. And that would at minimum clarify that if the government had charged this person with reckless homicide, that at least recklessness would need to be proven. Then there's another provision that we recommended, which U.S. Attorney's Office is recommending omitting, which requires intent as to any result elements. And what that would mean is that not only would you have to, recklessness wouldn't be sufficient, which is in about 49 jurisdictions in America the rule, but that in fact there's no such thing as reckless attempt as this result elements, you'd have to prove intent to get attempt conviction.
So I think the problem with this hypothetical is that if that offense had been fully committed, I don't know if it would be a crime. Because it seems like, I mean, maybe you could argue they were reckless, but I think that there's a very strong argument that that actually wouldn't constitute a crime at all, because they had no idea that somebody was in there and they were doing their job and maybe it would be negligence or something. But I think that there's a strong argument that that's not even a crime that it's committed. So I think they wouldn't come dangerously close to committing the offense because it wouldn't even be an offense if completed. So I think that is kind of what I interpret as kind of the problem with the underlying hypothetical in that situation.
Okay, so I would say two things. One, conduct constituting the offense, the conduct constituting homicide is the pulling of the lever. But that aside, right, there's still the question as to this is what I was asking at the beginning, was what are the substantive policies governing the results and circumstance elements that you guys had envisioned? The options, as far as I understand, are in general, you could say a mens rea equivalency approach, which is that no matter what, whatever the mental state of the underlying offense is, you still have to prove that. And another approach, which as I mentioned, at least is with respect to result elements, is the majority rule in 49 jurisdictions. Colorado is the only jurisdiction in America that allows for attempted reckless homicide. And even that is kind of like a depraved heart. And, it's not, as far as I understand, it's not super commonly charged, but they're the only one in America that would not at least elevate from even if the underlying charge is recklessness, to require the government to prove intent, a higher mental state, when the attempt is being charged. And so the two things that the U.S. Attorney's Office recommended deleting specifically speak to those issues. And what the U.S. Attorney's Office proposed is just the clause that says, with the intent to engage in conduct constituting offense. And so that's why I'm trying to understand, with those recommendations, how you envision those policies being resolved.
So now I actually think I understand your question much better. And I think what we are going to need to do is probably have a meeting that would include not only us, but our appellate division to talk about that further. Because
okay.
I think at the end of the day, in saying it's very clear, we do not think that planning is the way to go with this. It's not something that the government is required to prove. But when we change that to intent, because of the elementizing approach, which also considers a toggle on and off of circumstances and results, we need to think and perhaps clarify what that intent is referring to.
Yeah, right. So I think that'd be helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of looking at the case law elements, the first element is that they intended to commit the crime under Hailstock, which is what we cited here. So, I mean, maybe the first, this is not in our comments, in our submitted comments, but maybe the first line, like with the intent to, maybe that could be modified so it doesn't just apply to the conduct with the intent to commit that offense or something like that.
So that would be like a categorical rule of intent elevation, which would apply intent to results and circumstances no matter what the underlying offenses. That is a, you know, that's a very defensible policy. And, you know, and if that's, in terms of, as a matter of policy, that's what, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office is recommending, then, you know.
I agree with Renata that I might want to think about this a little bit more, frankly. I think you're focusing a little bit more on the planning aspect and kind of the addition of an inclusion of an additional element. I will think about that.
Sure.
Because I know that the relevant case law says intended to commit the crime, and I think I was kind of conflating the two.
And maybe I'd add in a couple more things just as you kind of go back, kind of think about that more. One is, so for attempt, right, you know, here we had, you know, was the with the intent, and, you know, again, as kind of Renata noted, you know, the implications then of having that at the beginning, right, and then that intent would require, you know, does that follow through, right, you know, like we have this kind of rule of construction where once you state a mental state, it applies to all the following elements. Is that, you know, is that how you want that to really work out here, right? And again, that would be what Michael just said about an across the board with intent to all elements that follow. And, you know, you can imagine, depending on the underlying offense, if purposefulness was required, well, that's going to be, as we've defined with intent, that's actually lower. But with regard to other elements, it might raise it. So it just, you know, it. The other thing I'd note, you know, so that was with attempt. For some of the others, conspiracy and solicitation, right? It was a little different the way kind of, you know, the USAO comments had been phrased, but basically it would leave in place purposefully, right? So here, for instance, on the screen, I'll blow it up a little bit so it's a little more visible. So this is for solicitation. What would be left, you know, is you'd start off by saying purposefully commands, requests, et cetera, et cetera. And so there the question is whether, again, kind of how purposefully hits all the result and circumstance and kind of, you know, all the following elements, because we don't have another mental state, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, again, that's a legit approach to say everything is purposefully. But we just want to make sure that was kind of what you wanted, because that it wasn't really kind of discussed more in your comments. So we just want to make sure that the language that you in your written comments kind of, you know, matched kind of the underlying meaning.
We do believe that there should be a mens rea attached to the solicitation. You certainly should. There should be some level of intent required for the solicitation.
Right.
I think our dispute was that it should be the culpability required by the underlying offense, but I think that the purposeful is actually appropriate.
Yeah. Okay. So that, and that, just to be clear.
Yeah, no. So, but you guys recommended deleting language that said with the culpability required by the underlying offense.
Right.
And it's the same issue here. The purposefully, it's the planning or commission of conduct. That it leaves open the question about what about results and circumstances. Subsection B, which you guys recommended deleting, specifically addresses the policies as to results and circumstances. And so, the last thing I'll say, you know, just on this is, you know, there are other aspects of culpability, and this goes to the relevance of the with the culpability required by the target offense language that sort of go beyond the purpose, knowledge, recklessness, negligence distinction. Mm-hmm. So for example, right, in homicide, you can have an intentional homicide that's committed in the absence of mitigating circumstances, in which case it's murder, or you can have an intentional homicide that's committed in the presence of mitigating circumstances, provocation, et cetera, which is manslaughter. And there's a pretty big grading distinction there. And so presumably when you're talking about an attempt, you know, you want the same thing. If it's an attempted murder, but it happens in the context of provocation, that's attempted manslaughter. Versus if you have an something that, you know, not the intent language or talking about mental states doesn't address is this kind of broader sense of culpability. And so the phrase with the culpability required by the target offense specifically addresses that, because culpability is defined in Section 201 to incorporate these other aspects of culpability. And so to the extent you guys are recommending deleting that language, you know, there just needs to be some form of specification to address that.
And I think the purposeful knowledge is appropriate. Like, I'm kind of, I can't think of an instance where you would, like, solicit a manslaughter. You
know, right,
I think
right.
that that would be, I think part of solicitation is a bit more premeditated
right,
than
right.
it tends to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think requiring, like I kind of said in our comments, I think requiring a premeditation for the solicitation kind of, you know, might add an additional element that's not necessary.
Sure.
But I think requiring the solicitation be purposeful, I think it's appropriate.
Sure.
Can I just say, after you guys meet with their appellate staff, it would be good if you circulated something, because I don't know that I necessarily agree with USAO across the board on this, or at least where it seems to be up. And so I'd like another opportunity to review what you think.
Sure. Well, I don't know exactly how to work this out.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, if it's a change from, like, the written comments, deadlines
yeah.
passed, how do we handle that and get the word out? Our goal is both to be kind of like keep the ball moving forward and keep everybody like as engaged as possible with like the latest information. At the same time, like, we also kind of like, you know, again, Michael's leaving. So, you know, we're on kind of deadline to like do kind of our next round while we can still have Michael as a resource.
Yeah.
So there's some time for
the next round.
So right, so on this, on the chapter 3, I imagine, and again, we aren't crystal clear yet, some follow-up conversations maybe with the council on, you know, kind of timing and rollout, working back from when we're going to release, you know, to the council and mayor. And depending on that, you know, we'll do this, but, you know, I think as I've said before, before we have a kind of a vote on the final version, there will be at least one more. Okay, so there will be at least one more crack at this. At this, like, for instance, this chapter 3, right? My guess is it'll end up being this fall or winter. Like, you know, we've got this big cluster of stuff. We're right now working on drug and weapon offenses. So my guess is we will get that out to you while we're still processing all the feedback on this chapter 3, on the stuff that you're doing now. And then we'll kind of have a penultimate version for at least a short period of review, some point this late fall, winter. But then we get into questions about like precise timing and how that goes out. So there will be one. I don't know exactly when though.
Just so I understand, you think that next crack at this would be sometime in the fall? Is that right?
Our next issuance of it would be like our next draft would probably be late fall, winter. The kicker for us is partly, again, on just staffing logistics, honestly. Like, we kind of got to lock down as much as possible about that next draft very soon because of, you know, Michael's presence. We want to, like, get that much together. We've got other pieces, though, too, so the sooner the better.
What we need to do is do our internal conference and then confer with you and then not just... OHGDC with everybody.
I think that's right.
Of our position and where we all.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And I think you know, look, if you guys end up want to change your written comments, like, you know, look, even if it's kind of after the deadline, we certainly welcome them. We'll distribute them. That should be part of the record, right? Like, how we end up being able to incorporate that timing wise for the next one. You know, less clear. Like, we'll do our best, but, like, our best may not be to, like, you know, be able to incorporate kind of late changes to the written comments, but I do think orally we should hear that, and everybody should then be rethinking it, because, you know, it might affect, and honestly, it may not, it's just, like, insights, right? Like, on all this process as we go forward, right, people hear something going on one side, and it triggers things on another side. So, you know, if in June, for instance, we could, you know, have a meeting or hear more or, you know, get some feedback from you all kind of on this, even if it's just like, you know, we at least mean, for instance, right, the mens rea of the underlying offense must be proven. And beyond that, you know, we can talk, right? Like, even knowing that, I think might, for instance, like, yeah, solve, like, Dave's, like, you know, like, that might be everybody, so that, like, look, next time this comes up, that will be on everybody's mind, right? And, like, that narrows the range of possible difference. Good.
Late July, early August.
Yeah. Well, we're right.
What is so the if we could get though?
Yeah, what is ETD?
What is ETD?
ETD, estimate time departure, yeah, not arrival. ETA Arizona. There we go.
All right. I mean, I think this is something where we go back and consider it.
Yeah.
What does this mean in terms of the elementizing?
That's right.
That specifically takes into consideration circumstances and results, not just what we sort of generally call conduct.
Sure.
We can have that discussion with you all, and then we'll just submit updated comments.
Great.
What I think it's going to be.
Great. And again, if you don't want to do it in writing, we can also have that discussion, right? Like, you know,
sometimes that's faster.
Sometimes that's faster, and and one last thing, I'll chip in on that, and Michael may have something else to say on this too, is, you know, I think the hypos help on this, right? And you're saying, like, you know, the construction, you know, another example, Michael, you might say I'm totally off base on this, but, you know, is to think about, like, you know, statutory rape or something where, like, consensual, you know, sexual act where, but for the age, the circumstance of the age of the victim, but for that one, you know, it's the circumstance that is kind of everything hinges on, you know, what is the mental state as to that, right? So, like, you know, that, anyway, that might be a more, maybe more intuitive, maybe less intuitive.
It's the whole point of the elementizing approach that distinguishes, deals with this issue. The distinction between an act and an assault.
That's right.
And I would just also say that on this particular issue, like the sort of, you know, offense analysis, like single mental state approach, which does kind of reflect DC current law in that, like, that is the way it's stated, has been problematic. And the report spent a few pages exploring that, but Judge Beckwith had a concurring opinion in a case, I think a year or two ago, where she goes through kind of outlining the problems and showing how you know the DCCA has made kind of conflicting statements and it's confusing because of that kind of singular offense analysis based understanding. So, you know, we're trying to move away from that, but
I also think it's different in the attempt contact versus solicitation and conspiracy contact.
Okay. Right. Yeah. And it may be. Yeah, it may be a simple solution in, for instance, of like purposefully across the board, perhaps for solicitation, where a higher mental, right, like versus again attempt or something. So, and again, those are policy decisions to an extent. There's case law. Again, the case law isn't great, and then how to draft it and articulate it so that we don't inadvertently do something that we don't want to do. Great. That was the kind of the big piece. I don't know, you know, the other things were, there were a number of like kind of drafting comments from all, from both USAO and OAG that were helpful. But I don't think we had it, like, they were pretty clear. Other matters, and, you know, maybe the only other thing I'd jump in, since I think you kind of raised the importance of the planning requirement, you know, we'll definitely take a look at that. I think what, you know, our intent was not to make planning a new element, right? In the sense of requiring something like premeditation or deliberation. And it was great for you to point that out, and we'll definitely address that. Because it is new language. You know, that would be new language. So the meaning of that is really important to be clear about. Other questions or concerns? I'd open it up to anything on the, again, the comments we got back on Chapter 3.
I put this comment in, or these comments, but I didn't know if it was more appropriate for the assault later. But in terms of the kind of assault with intent to commit being subsumed into attempt.
Sure.
I believe that that was, I mean, I think that the commentary explicitly said that that was the intent to have attempt encompass
those types
of assault with intent to commit. Do you still think that it would include all assault with intent to commit under the attempt umbrella?
Yeah, so in terms of the scope of the assault with intent to versus the new attempt.
Yeah,
at,
you know, yeah, so I mean, I think our general, you know, and you know, Rachel's the assault person, but, you know, I think the general sense was right, yes, that we would be getting rid of the AUE series of offenses. Historically, the reason these AUE offenses exist was, you know, they kind of developed before general attempts did, and, you know, so most of, almost all jurisdictions that have, like, modernized their codes adopt the general attempt statute, like the one we're recommending, get rid of the AUE offenses. All the more so where we have a dangerous proximity test. You know, it's one thing if you're adopting a substantial step test where attempt liability happens a little bit earlier, so then maybe you want to say that while the AUE series of offenses kind of hit this middle ground, you know, typically people still don't preserve them, but that's one thing. But given that we're adopting a dangerous proximity standard, there's very little difference, if any, in terms of the two. And so, you know, it doesn't, both from a legislative perspective, but also in terms of grading, like, it just really doesn't make, we think, a tremendous amount of sense to preserve them.
So I will say there are different penalties.
Right, and we haven't addressed penalties.
Sure.
Well, so yeah, so we've recommended, so we haven't addressed penalties for specific offenses, but the recommendation, we have proposed a recommendation for the penalties of general attempts, which would be a 50% penalty discount, which is to say a person who's convicted of attempt, the statutory maximum would be halved. So
I do think from a practice perspective, assault with intent to commit crimes are something we rely on heavily. I mean, my background is sex abuse, so I can talk about that most familiarly.
Sure.
But that is something that we rely on very heavily and use very frequently, but I think attempt liability, even under the current construction, would not address the situation. You know, I mean, I put one example, but kind of a more extreme example, you break into someone's home, they tackle them, you know, no clothing is removed, you know, while you're telling them how you want to have sex with them or do these horrible things to them, and you're attacking them while you're doing it, I think that there's a very strong argument, we don't usually charge these as an attempted first-degree sex abuse. I don't know that you come dangerously close.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because you know, I used to get that comment. And I thought it was interesting. So, under current district law, there's not a ton of clarity on dangerous proximity, but there is one case. It's a case everyone cites too, and it's clear. Someone's approaching a bank. They're two blocks away from the bank, and they were convicted of attempted robbery, and it was upheld, saying that, you know, being two blocks or a block away, walking into a bank is sufficiently close to consummating an offense that attempt liability attaches. So that's why, you know, based on that, and then the commentary on the dangerous proximity test we recommended gives many, many examples, which kind of further solidify that point. I found, you know, I thought maybe you could talk a little bit more about why you think it would be unclear under a dangerous proximity test that someone who's actually assaulting someone on their way to perform a sex act would not satisfy the dangerous proximity test.
I mean, maybe we just should be interpreting this more closely and charging all of these people differently, but I think that traditionally we...
So I think tell me if I'm wrong, I've been away from it for a while, but if you wanted to hide those in the sexual assault context, that should not depend upon the intervention of a Good Samaritan, for example. So in one context, you may have dangerously close because the person does not get to penetration, but you have evidence of bad intent because you may have evidence of semen on clothing or something else, right? In another, it's clear that that's what the person is trying to do, and yet there are screams and somebody runs in before that happens, and so that is the only difference in those. And so
is that, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and I think maybe if I, like, I think part of it is just, I think one thing you're pointing out is that, look, versus kind of simply there's an assault and an intent, right? It's just requiring, and case law just hasn't been developed, practice just hasn't gone this direction, to determine what for different offenses, and different fact patterns, is going to constitute dangerous proximity, right? Like, that just hasn't been spelled out in the past with great clarity, by DC. We've got this one case which is like, actually seems to pull back pretty far, right? Like, they weren't even in the building, and compare that to, again, kind of that, if you take that, if that really is the goal, the guide that we have for DCCA opinion, then the kind of the hypo of, right, one person, physically grappling, with somebody and saying things about raping them would seem to be kind of clearly more egregious and closer and within the scope. But I guess the question is just like, right, are we sure about that? Right? There isn't a DCCA opinion squarely on, for instance, that really talks about dangerous proximity for this type of what was either assault with intent to commit, a sex crime or attempted sex crime. We just don't have that. So I get that, like, that might be the rub of this. Our view is definitely that it should encompass that, right? Like, so we don't think that, we're restricting the scope of liability. Penalty's separate conversation, but in terms of does, the attempted sex assault or attempted sexual abuse, name your degree, how does that match up with assault with intent to commit X? We think that covers the same base. In fact, it may even be broader in some respects. So that's our interpretation. And looking at other jurisdictions, as Michael said, this is kind of a not entirely across the board, but almost across the board, a changeover.
There's a 2015 or 2016 DCCA case where because I would say historically, and I think in most jurisdictions, it's understood that dangerous proximity is broader than assault, that you cross the threshold for dangerous proximity before you get to an assault. And I think that's generally accepted as just the common law principle. And there's a DCCA case where there was some question, I think it might have been assault with intent to kill versus attempted homicide, where the DCCA said, well, we don't see how you could cross dangerous proximity in this case without getting to assault. But it's taken for granted there that, of course, an assault is dangerous proximity. So in other words, I don't think, based upon the limited things that I've seen from DCCA, there's any question that a dangerous proximity happens once you hit assault. There may be a question going the other direction, which is that can you cross dangerous proximity without getting to an assault? But,
And I think maybe a distinction in my mind is just kind of what it's looking at. Like, the attempt, it's for looking at the conduct and kind of what's happening versus the assault intent to commit. It's really focusing on the conduct. And I think this might change a little bit kind of as a caveat with the new assault definition that requires bodily injury, which could kind of create separate issues for the assault with intent to commit. Maybe a menacing with intent to commit as well. But I think that really the focus of it is on different conduct. And I think the assault with intent to commit, yes, there does need to be a level of assaultive conduct, but I really think the focus of that is on the intent and the person's intent to commit the underlying offense. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think the attempted, the attempt statute really focuses on what conduct has actually happened aside from just the assault, and so kind of focuses on different aspects. Yeah. And I know that practically, sure, they could overlap a lot. I'm not saying they couldn't, and I think probably a lot of first degree sex abuses would involve an assault as well, because it needs force. But I do think that kind of separating that and focusing really heavily on the intent versus on the conduct.
Yeah. Well, and that links.
I think that that's correct. It's just a description of the law. So it is kind of a policy decision as opposed to assault being kind of the same as an attempt. Some of these cases come up with regard to a case called McQuarter, where a black man was convicted of having the intent to rape a white woman on very little evidence. And so I think one idea is that tests like dangerous proximity corroborates intent in a way that just letting a jury or fact finder, you know, determine what is an intent kind of has the danger of kind of letting the fact finder rely on stereotypes.
The other thing I chime in is, again, right, like, hearing your comments, right, like, yeah, being very clear about, like, what mental states are, does attempt, right, trigger, right, like, for as to all the elements of the underlying, like, yeah, being, clarifying that and being, is a key part of nailing this down, right, because you need to be, you need, right, like, if it's going to be relying on attempted sex assault, knowing how that attempt liability attaches, you know, what are the culpable mental states required is going to be key, right? So I just like, maybe this is part of the conversation too that goes, you know, to kind of what are the culpable mental states for attempt? Like those are part of the same conversation, I guess.
And I think one other example, not to harp on this for too long, but like if it's all with intent to kill, and if I'm focusing on that whole law and not necessarily revisions, because I know that like men, this would more be menacing, not assault.
Sure.
But like if you shoot a gun at someone and miss,
okay.
I think that could be an assault with intent to kill if you're shooting at their head and just get it a little bit to the side. But whether it would, I mean, it could be attempted murder. I'm not conceding it's not. But I think, you know, if they don't come dangerously close to dying, I'm not sure how.
Yeah, so that's called a completed attempt. And, you know, I don't think there would be any question in any jurisdiction that, I mean, that's kind of like when attempt liability began, that's what it was, just completed attempts. But since then, it's expanded outwards. But pretty much everyone agrees that once you engage in all the conduct, that would carry out the result if it had been successful. That at that point, you've committed an attempt.
Right, and I think that could be an attempt.
Yeah.
So it probably wasn't the best example, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the same seems to be true for the example given here of the break-in and the stated intent to sexually abuse, right? That is not dissimilar from the shooting and miss example.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's a little hard. Like the nice, yeah, the shoot and miss, like the bullets flying, and it's all left to, you know, the chance versus, you know, right, if it's a penetration or a touch. Like there's a level of physicality and direct, you know, that sex crimes raise that, like, it's kind of like up to the very moment when the touch occurs, right? Or you're right, like, you know, like the, all the elements haven't quite been completed. So. Yeah, I mean, look, the other thing is, you know, this is a big shift, right? Like, moving away from the AUI offenses, relying on the attempt liability. And if, again, our position is or has been that, you know, this, we don't think this reduces liability. And another direction to go on this is to kind of say, hey, if we need to be particularly clear on this, right? Like, you know, I can imagine whatever your comments end up being, you know, like, you know, and in the alternative, if you can keep going down that road, please be clear that, you know, and we can put examples in the commentary. Like, again, we don't mean to be reducing liability in these cases. So there might be places where we can tweak in our individual offenses or something, you know, just putting in an example, right? Because it's a new kind of operation and a new way of thinking. And so even just, you know, that might be helpful as a matter of clarification.
Just to be clear, I do think that a dangerous proximity test, as a practical matter, does reduce liability as opposed to having to prove intent. Again, I'm happy with that, but I do think, I mean, that's the way that I would evaluate.
Yeah. Yeah. Other thoughts on this point and kind of how they... Oh, well, let me say one more thing, too, on penalties, which... yeah. So we haven't gotten to penalties yet. We hope to... September might be a great month for penalties. It might end up being October. But I think that's kind of where we're kind of aiming for. And yes, beginning to align all of these will help. Again, we have the 50% kind of across the board standard attempt, whatever it is, unless there's something specific in the offense. Honestly, at this point, you know, we haven't identified things that are that kind of have a basis for varying from that. What that 50% is going to do is having any kind of consistent attempt liability, right, for specific offenses will be a change to district law. Because right now, it's all over the map, right? We have the default general provisions for, you know, 180 days or 5 years for property offenses or crimes of violence. But then we have all of the, like, offense-specific little variants, right, for robbery, right, you know, that really muck that up. So I think, you know, our goal is to have a greater degree of consistency kind of across the board, across all offenses for attempt, using that 50% mark, which is where sex offenses are now, right? You know, the attempt is half the 50%. It's a kind of a standard thing, and, you know, many jurisdictions how to handle this. So I think, you know, where we're heading is, like, keeping that 50% for attempts. The question is just then, and which is what everybody's going to want to know, and I'm sure will be contested. So when you plug that in with whatever particular numbers for the maximum, right, how does that fall out? Does it mean that put these things together and, you know, attempted robbery of a certain level is going to be, is it going to be 3 years? Is it going to be 15? Right, like, you know, like, that's kind of, you know, the end product is what you want to know when you put those together. Hopefully, again, in September, October, we'll be able to get out those penalty recommendations. And for everybody to, like, really, you know, rubber meets the road there. 50% of what? Right? You know, and we'll have a pitch out for, you know, what the maxima should be so that you can figure out what that's going to entail. And, of course, the fact that for many of these offenses, not sex offenses really, but many other offenses like robbery, we're grading a lot more. So it'll just be a more complex array, right? Like, you'll have, you know, different degrees of robbery, attempted different degrees will end up with different numbers. Anything else on this kind of, I know this is revisiting some of the stuff that we talked about with assault, et cetera, on where particularly the AWE offenses come up, but any other questions on this regard? Or and if not, you know, I don't know if there was anything else. You know, we could talk also about, you know, any comments on 214. We talked about Chapter 3. So 214 was the merger provision. Again, you know, I appreciate your, you know, folks' comments on that, and you know, we could have kind of a broader discussion about it, but we didn't have any particular questions from your comments. So unless there was something you all wanted to raise on 214, if not, then I think we're kind of through the first part of the agenda, which is like the set of written comments we got back. So. Last call on that. And if not, then I'd open it up to, again, the rest of the report, which we don't have comments, right? You know, comments are due, again, it's July 8th. Nice after the holiday. Sorry about that. It's Monday after the holiday weekend. Hope that doesn't ruin anybody's week holiday. So, yeah, and again, it may be that folks don't have general questions about, again, what's under review now. You're doing a review. I got an email from Dave the other day. And, you know, we're happy to, like, address, you know, particular questions people might have or anything people want to raise now with the group.
I have a really basic, maybe simple one.
Great.
You change the way you introduce the offense itself by taking the name out of the offense.
Okay.
And I was curious about that because I was wondering how that actually then gets indicted or, so like pull up any of them.
So like this, so sex assault, instead of saying first degree
sexual
assault, it just has first degree.
It just says first degree.
Yeah.
And so then you go on and explain the difference between first degree, second degree, and third
yeah.
degree. And you do that throughout. And I was wondering why the change.
You bet.
To me, it makes more sense to keep the main title in there
yeah.
for charging purposes,
yeah.
let alone for information to the people being.
You bet. And that was like, actually, there's, I know, So this is one like common drafting thing. Like there were a few drafting conventions that we did with this last version. This was not meant to be substantive. I think it was OAG had the comment before.
I believe that there's a general vision.
In fact, you offered a solution.
But one thing is just that I believe there's a general provision. I think you had worked on this, chapter one that says that the headings and subheadings shall not be construed as having any.
No, I know, and I'm not debating that it substantively changes anything.
Oh,
but to me, when we talk about what is being charged, you want to say it's a first-degree sexual assault.
Right.
You don't want to say it's
sexual assault first degree.
First degree, whatever. Right. Whichever way you... Yeah.
The way... I mean, you wouldn't need to just talk about A. The statute's actually called sexual assault.
That's right.
Subsection A is called first degree.
Right.
It's probably just switching it in the indictment. I bet it's not...
All right.
To me,
it's clearer to include it, whether it's first or second, in the titles.
You bet.
And so I just wanted to mention that. I don't know.
Yeah, these are the kind of things.
I was debating whether I'd write it.
Would love
it up
a straw poll because, you know.
Think about it.
Yeah, if it's non substantive, but it's drafting.
It's just a question of.
Yeah, it's preference, a style choice.
It's for practitioners when you're flipping the page. Like,
absolutely.
Still on
if you only see.
Right.
Accidentally
flip three pages.
Yeah.
You're on a different offense.
So just from a. Council drafting standpoint, the way our GC would probably restructure this is to say there'd be lead-in language, it would say title, sexual assault. I think it would probably be an undesignated section saying an actor commits the offense of, and then A, sexual assault in the first degree, when...
I'm sorry, but I feel very strongly that the whole point of this exercise has been to say, this is the structure of the code henceforth. And that's something, that's a skeletal frame on which we have been working the whole time. And those words mean something to us now, just like our, you know, not making clear whether our recommendation for a culpable mental state applies in addition to the what we think of as acts, but the results and consequences. I mean, we now have a very particular framework, and those things that seem slight to codification counsel actually have meaning now. They have significance.
Well, Rod, I don't really understand. I'm talking about changing the first four words of that. So sexual assault stays the same.
Right.
Even would stay the same. You would simply have lead-in language saying the offense. I mean, you would essentially be moving the first five words up. I raise this now because this is going to have to go to general counsel.
Yeah. Kevin's thinking ahead to what he's going to have to deal with.
That's a really important point because I don't think I ever considered.
Yeah.
That codification counsel, general counsel, would make changes like that. Which am I wrong?
Well,
that's a big deal.
I feel like that's huge for us.
So you know, look, Kevin is in the position of having to like think through these practical. You know, how's the legislation going to be moved, and it's going to have to go through those hoops. Now, again, well, this and you know, I would certainly agree that I think the criminal code has historically been treated kind of not that differently, right, than other legislation in the code to its detriment. And I think, you know, we're trying to do it in a different way that's clearer. Now, that, you know, that's debatable. Now, like, right, so we have defenses, right? We have defenses in a separate subsection. That is not always, you know, penalties. You know, we use our kind of titles to break these things apart. We do it in a standardized way. I think it's clear. Maybe there's a way that we can finesse this in a way that is minimally, that basically keeps our structure, but minimally does what, you know, the codification council might kind of like sigh and say, well, fine. But I agree. We can follow up on that. And the sooner we do that, the better. Because I think the ripple effects, we do not want any substantive. And even on the non-substantive side, you know, part of what we're trying to do is create a clearer organization and, you know, Yeah, so
I sort of come down in the middle,
okay,
because I think, I mean, in a couple of the memos that OAG has, I know Legal Counsel Division objects to the, as defined in the other sections.
Sure, yeah,
division,
we'll talk about that in a second,
you know, which is whether that's the technical or non-technical, you know, and I would assume that OAG will go along with legal counsel and some testimony in the future to say you shouldn't have those sections in there.
Yeah.
So I don't really consider that substantive.
Which legal counsel?
OAG's legal counsel division. They've been chiming in saying, Worms, if you miss a term, then, and then we had a couple where terms were missed, and then what is the implication of a missed term there? Does it mean something or doesn't it? If it does, and so that's an example, I think, of where OAG at least will come in and say, yeah, well, whatever the rest of it is,
that's right,
this is a structural change.
Yeah. So that's a specific example I do think we should also talk about in just a minute, but go ahead, Paul. Yeah.
I mean, to me, the question is, what is the work of the general counsel in terms of codification? Because if our idea is that this has been a deliberate process, and it's hard to imagine what a non-substantive change to our proposed code would be, because every word is deliberate.
Well, I think, I don't want to say too much, but it was in the vein of what Dave was already proposing, which is that this is not clear from an indicting standpoint, so it needs to be amended. I don't really see it as a difference in kind of what we were doing on a monthly basis here. But I also say, there are powers that be greater than the committee who are going to have a say in how this looks. So if that is a sticking point for everyone here, that's something we need to be socializing early.
The more we can sort it out, the better. And or be clear about our pitch, right? Which is to say, maybe this really should be the exception, but here's why.
Yeah, and that's fine too. But then there probably needs to be a statement about how
it's important and why.
The four corners of how you read the drafting of Title 22 is going to be fundamentally different than every other title in the DC code.
You bet. You bet. And I think, so these are points, and we can work with you and through you also, connect more with the Codification Council. We did years ago. At that point, there was very little interest in, working with us, but that time has flowed. Things might have changed.
And just to emphasize the point, our goal is not just to revise and reform the existing criminal code, but to change the way that legislators draft criminal code going forward. They should look at what exists as a model for how they are going to draft new criminal code, right? And the codification of any proposal should be to map any proposal onto the new modern format, right? It's a modern format for criminal code, and we want new legislation to take this form because it makes things clearer. And so to the extent that we have to get Codification Council on board to ensure that that process happens and that they can also help socialize this idea with council members who are coming up with new ideas for criminalization or decriminalization or changes in crime, that's an important part of our task.
I mean, you will see, I think, that from our offices, to the extent that we are proponents of legislation, you will probably know, because it's going to be drafted in a way that probably at this point might be a hybrid between the Elementine and what we have now. But I would expect that you would be able to tell in the drafting that is showing, that is thinking in that direction, where we make a very easy shift if it's something completely new to this format. And sometimes it seems like these things that we've done are just organizational, purely non-substantive structural, but sometimes they do impact the way that our foundational structure works.
Yeah, and I think that's the rub, is like, look, we do have flex on some of these style drafting points, and hopefully we can find a way to, like, again, thread the needle with Codification Council. And like you're saying, maybe change the legal language just a little bit, change the titling just a little bit.
And my comment is really directed at offenses where we're talking about degrees, where the lead-in language is going to be identical across each degree. If you scroll down to second degree, I'm sure it says an actor commits second degree sexual assault when that actor.
Yeah.
So if you simply Yeah. An actor commits sexual assault.
Right.
When that actor, or,
yeah.
And then you can have in the second degree,
exactly.
In the first degree,
yep.
In the third degree, and literally all the other substantive yep. languages unchanged.
Yeah. Yeah.
So since yeah. we were talking about how we format this particular offense
yeah.
with its degrees,
good.
That seemed like a very small way to get it consistent with pretty much every other drafting practice in the council, and I don't think it has a substantive effect.
Yeah.
But if I'm wrong,
we'll address it.
It
we'll address
solves
it.
My issue.
Yeah. So
I raised them early.
Right. So some particular style points. So one, we'll follow up about some of these style drafting issues with a codification council. Two, right. So Dave, and honestly, I feel this is kind of like, you know, straw poll. Like, it's very subjective. You know, frankly, the only reason we reduced it. Was because we thought since it's in the same section, it was clear enough. The titles don't explicitly have any legal effect, and it just reduced language. You know, we're at a 100-plus page document, and honestly, it actually was legit. So, you know, like it chops a page or you know of solid space text off of, you know, it's a 1% reduction, not much, pretty trivial. If again, so. Yeah.
I'd go with clarity over. Like,
go with clarity. Put in the full title. Other preferences in the room.
I would have an objection to clarity.
Great. Okay. Good. Patrice, chime in.
I'm sometimes overly concerned with the style of everything.
Patrice in the house. If she's our consistency, come on, people. Let's
get it together. Yeah, the consistency and the uniformity, and then also just I take very seriously the right to self-representation and people who are not lawyers being able to read and understand the code. And so I think that there are some things about phrasing that make it more conversational and more like plain English that are really important to consider. And so I just think that that's one thing to keep in mind is breaking things up, even if it's just something very minor like changing the lead-in language, can make it harder for a non-lawyer to read and understand. So I think it's an important thing to keep in mind.
But one of the goals is to give notice to the public
notes, yeah.
of what
right.
constitutes criminal.
Absolutely.
And actually, that's part of the reason why I think it needs to be in there. Because I think when people who are non-lawyers are talking, they shouldn't have to go to the title yeah. a page before yeah. to understand if they're in third degree something. They should be able to say third degree sexual assault. Because yeah. it should be right there in what they're looking at.
It does say an actor commits first degree.
No, I understand. I'm not.
Yeah. No. It's a small point, but it's a thing.
I mean, I think this is
going to be
clear
available,
text. I don't want to
digitally,
drop
right?
That.
People now Google things.
Almost
they
only.
Search
yeah.
things,
that's right.
Right?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
so, if you're searching first degree sexual assault,
yeah.
that's the way you're going to put it into the Google machine, right?
Yeah.
Or actually, in
on the internet,
my very fully
certified
DC code
limited Boolean connector functionality. In fact,
does it really?
It does. Mm-hmm. It's
oh,
very different than any
yeah,
Lexis or Westlaw conventions, but it's an existing.
Sure
you just got to hit the advanced option.
Call it a Google machine.
Good to know.
It's awesome.
That was my only one.
Good. Well, let me raise another point, which Dave and kind of raised, you know, and again, it's a style choice, and I can see how you can make arguments both ways, right? We put in, and this is the one Dave kind of mentioned, so at the end, right, we have in every section, pretty much, a definition section that not, almost always, doesn't provide a new definition for that section. It just provides the cross-references to where the definition is. And so, you know, it looks like what's on the screen, right? You guys have seen this. And I think, you know, Dave's point, you know,
oh, wait,
was...
Geez, point.
I'm sorry, Dave's point. Yes, yes, sorry,
not
sorry.
One of mine,
and okay. Yeah, I don't mean to... yes, sorry, I apologize. You know, OAG's point is like, look, you know, one, again, it technically does nothing, right? It is, in that sense, superfluous. It is only there from our perspective for kind of notice and clarification purposes. And, you know, so that's on the one hand, I think by adding that kind of in, things which are, you know, most of these, you know, bodily injury, you might think that's a technical term. You know, if there wasn't any place pointing it out that there's a definition somewhere else and it actually has like a technical definition, you might not think that's a technical term. Sexual acts, you know, some of these things, anyway, so I think,
I
like
think their issue, though, is more in the inadvertent leaving out of a definition from that section.
Absolutely.
And what are the arguments that then come from in all the other ones?
Yeah,
dangerous
right.
weapon meant it was clear in this text, but here we don't say what dangerous weapon is. And I know
that's right.
You know, drafting is tough,
yep.
but we found a couple of examples
yep.
where that actually happened, and
yep.
we want to avoid the argument.
Yeah.
So, but does it mean the same thing?
But
with
that
it?
Should not be the issue anymore, right?
Right?
Because the whole point is we were saying from the beginning, person or individual or whatever, we ought to pick one, stick with it. It ought to mean the same
yeah.
thing everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dangerous weapon ought to mean the same thing everywhere, and if it doesn't for whatever reason, it has to be indicated in that particular place.
Yeah.
So that is a vestige of a of the CC, what did you say it is?
Yeah, CC.
Whatever we are.
CRC.
Yeah.
That's pre-culture.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
I mean, and that is part of what this is doing to change that culture.
That's right.
The way that there has been consistency in definition should dispense with
that's
that
right.
concern.
That's right. We hope, like, look, this is a double level, right? Like, again, like, we have been very clear, laying out clear, consistent definitions, or at least far more clear and far more consistent definitions than anything, you know, previously. The question is just, you know, right, you know, I mean, I definitely get OAG's point is like, you know, we made some errors. The council in the future, if, you know, adopts this adapting style, is probably going to have errors. Errors will happen. So the question, and how do you weigh that against? Now, I think, again, there are different ways to handle this. You know, one is, again, we have, again, in Chapter 1, that kind of lead in language, that titles are, you know, oops.
Yikes.
Yeah, don't look at my mail. Let me find the... Here we go. Blow that up. So, you know, we have that, like, kind of, like, you know, effective headings and captions, you know, may aid, you know, the interpretation. We also say, you know, some of these general purposes at the beginning. We could address this, but, you know.
Actually, again, that's why I distinguish between me and legal counsel division, because I sort of lean towards what Renata said, but... I mean, they are a legal counsel division.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm wondering if it would satisfy them if in that section it was a paragraph D.
Yeah.
That included that definition.
Cross-references.
Cross-references that may appear in the division. I'd like to hear their take on that.
Yeah, that
may solve the issue because they're interested in avoiding arguments.
You bet. And that's a legit concern. Again, the motive for this... And I'd be curious if, you know, there are others' thoughts. Because, again, this was a change for this whole update, right? Like, when we now have in 701, right, this giant list of defined terms for all of Title 22. We think that's a great thing. And we hope, for practitioners at least, it's going to be much more convenient. Rather than, oh, you know, okay, at the beginning of that chapter there are some definitions, but then I have to go over here to the beginning of the subtitle for those, and some are tucked away over here. You know, basically our rule has been, if there's only one place, one statute, and it's a very specific thing, we have put a couple of definitions in the offenses, and I'm looking at Patrice because it was,
stalking
was one, something else, and it, sometimes it's places too where it's like, the predicate offense, which I think was one of the hooks for stalking.
Or where the word means something different.
Right.
In other parts of the
text. It is like a special use.
It only
and it's,
means this here.
Yeah, and like, you know, a predicate offense where it's like, again, like we don't want to put this whole list of stuff, like it
person.
Blows up.
Well, so, but, I mean, recently we drafted a bill where it had to cover, if it was referring to a special police officer, had to go to NPD, if it was referring to a DCHAP officer had to go to DCHA director. So what we decided is we defined the term designated agency principal and then said when the subject police officer is NPD, it means NPD chief of police.
Yeah.
When the subject police officer is special police officer, it means DCHAPD, it goes to DCHA director.
Yeah.
So there could be something like the predicate offense.
That's right.
And you designate it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that adds.
Yeah. So there are little things that we've tried to finesse.
Can I just find a second on what you just said? Because that makes me think, I actually may, I may have a suggestion that's a little different than the way you've been doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're defining a term differently for a particular section, then by all means, I think it needs to be in that section.
Yeah.
Because that's for clarity. But a single use of a term, I think, should be up front. Because you never know. I mean, when I submit stuff to the council, I frequently steal language and definitions that are already there because I know they've used them and say, this is because we're doing it the same reason you did it someplace else. So in a single use one that is not different, that is just a single use, I think that really needs to be in the definition section, because who knows what the city council is going to do 10 years from now that may rely on that definition. And then you have situations where some are in some places and some are in other places.
Gotcha.
So where it's different, fine. If it's just a definition, I think it should be up front. That's with the crossword.
Yeah, with the I see. Now that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought through that. Like keeping it in the big list, even if it only appears in one offense, people are going to rely on that. You know, they're not going to be looking to the stalking statute to see that. Oh, that unique term is defined there. What they're going to be looking at is they're going to be looking at the big list.
That's right.
And then they're going to come up with a whole new, like, oh, yeah, it seems like nobody's defined that term. We're going to define it and stick it in there, and then suddenly we have a conflict.
That's right.
Right? That was not seen. So that's a good point. We could add, and again, we can do this. This is a matter of drafting and just clarity and adding it to the list and maybe having it there. We will address this. Good. Are there other drafting things? I mean, just like, again, so this is this thing, OAG raised about, kind of having these definition cross references that was raised. The other kind of drafting thing I wanted to raise, I don't think anybody raised it, but I've noticed it. I don't think I've even raised it with other staff, but like it's been bothering me lately. So let me check in with you all on this. Sorry, guys. And this is, I take responsibility for instituting this. And so, yes. So this except as provided in language. So this is just, I pulled up randomly. So, criminal neglect of a minor, right? And what we did was we have this, these kind of lead-in language that links this particular degree, right? Statement of the offense liability. This is your, this is a complete statement of offense liability. And what it does is by saying except as provided in section D, well, if we scroll down a little bit, exception D, okay. And this is coming out of, current law, this like, it's this weird thing about, it's a safe harbor for, leaving a baby in a safe place. Yeah. Okay, so the question is not substantive here. The question is just as a drafting matter, is it helpful or confusing to have that except as provided below language when, maybe it's clear enough. You have it, it's just a subsection below, right? And you don't need to put it up, you don't have to repeat that language except as provided.
So again, I think for clarity, that is duplicative, but it is clarifying, because I agree with Dave on the definitions, that you just take them out, because they're all defined in one place.
Yeah.
I agree with that, and I thought before he said that would be the solution.
Mm.
The problem with that is, in light of Patrice's comment about non-represented folks, that even for me as a practitioner, it's like a, don't forget, this is an important term in connection with this offense.
Yeah.
That's what you lose.
Yeah.
And you would lose that same kind of, it's like a heads up.
You need to
consider this exception that comes below. Practitioners will probably catch that.
Yeah.
I don't know that everybody would. And frankly, as a practitioner, I appreciate the heads up.
Yeah.
I will say, though, you don't put, like when there's a defense, you don't say, like, except as provided in the defense. Person commits.
That's right. And defenses, and especially if we have general defenses, right, like that we haven't even gotten to yet, right? Like, do we each time also say, except it's right here and those other defenses there? And so that's you're right. That is the worry is that this, I think we're not excellently stated, like the case for doing this, which is it provides a degree of additional notice what's going on. The worry is it miscommunicates because it isn't fully complete. That, like, which is to say, sure, there are exceptions here in subsection D. It's also, you can think about it as an exception to liability, what member of the public, that it's a defense, that it was all done, you know, again, maybe it's a parental exception, right, if we're in, you know, criminal neglect land. And so unless you're like, you know, if it's not also highlighting that defense, which is going to be located elsewhere because it's a general defense applicable to many of, then like, well, then, you know, like, yes, we're clarifying, but we're also maybe a little misleading because it isn't getting everything. So
yeah, just as a foil, yeah. I'm not endorsing this, but the current drafting practice, if you're trying to submit,
yes.
trying to signify the same idea, it would be to not include the except as subject provided, which I actually really buy into Renata's suggestion as to why preserving that would be important, but it would be including a notwithstanding the provisions of A, B, C, or D, or A, B, or C, no person shall be guilty.
Gotcha. So modify D to say that. Now, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, I had that feeling, too.
So that way it... Because
it would still link them together, but in a little different way.
Yeah, and it sort of creates a complementary where D is or A, B, and C are complementing or referencing D. D is referencing A, B, and C. There's an argument that it's duplicative because you have the except as provided and then notwithstanding. But if we're going for clarity, this is just a conflict of two canons of construction, and there's no reason why we couldn't do both. Yeah.
Wait, you're saying keep in the except as provided
and
D and?
I would delete except if
you... Are you okay with that? Okay, yeah. I bought into the notice requirement.
Yeah.
That's an alternative.
I make D clear and I buy the not fully complete.
Yeah.
I also, except for the label exception to liability, in D, it doesn't. There's no operative language that says this is functionally an exception to A, B, C, or D. It's just labeled as such.
Good point.
And can you scroll up
Good point.
To the
yeah.
top of it?
You bet.
And what that does by putting the notwithstanding is it makes it clear. I mean, I would say it absolutely applies to A, B, and C. But what it does in E, notice you don't, indeed, you don't say first degree, second degree, and third degree.
That's right.
It makes it clear to the world that you're not just talking about B or the one right above. It's all.
Because some of the exceptions actually aren't for everything.
For
so
every
it would be really
degree,
helpful.
Exactly.
That's right.
I want to weigh in on the definitions. I don't know where anybody has landed, so I don't know what maybe I might be splitting or creating a baby or whatever. But I think I like the idea of not new definitions in the statute only, but in the one big list. But I still like having cross-references definitions because I do think, you know, this comes up with crime of violence, right? Like all the time, people that gets used, and people have no idea.
Which
like,
list are you
it's
using?
It's a real term, right? Bodily injury is definitely one that people think they know what it is, and it's like, no, seriously, that's an actual term.
Yeah.
And so I sort of and a way of finding it quickly. I like the real I like Patrice's point and think that each section standalone should be pretty usable to non. Lawyers and should signal so that if there was language in the beginning that said like because definitions really wouldn't mean anything because it would all they'd all be in the list but it would be look it's just for helpful so some if for an aid for somebody to be able to find it and as a signal much like the titles are
I personally
how many
agree
babies
with that.
I support?
Yeah. Okay.
I agree with that.
Okay.
And I like the idea, by the way, I'm not sure if this is what you were pitching, but I like the idea of taking out the notwithstanding D's from A, B, and C and putting in the leading language into D.
Yeah. To do the notwithstanding A, B, and C into D.
That way you're not implying that there aren't other
are other things
or anything else.
Good.
You're just saying
good.
E applies to above.
Good. Honestly, yeah, this seems like a good, helpful consensus on drafting these things.
Everybody disagree to everything? Should we just
say it? Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now,
there's a council drafting practice, no less.
What?
Unbelievable.
All right. Was there anything else, you know, at this, you know, again, drafting wise,
not drafting wise. I just wanted to quickly, before we get too far, I was in agreement with Dave's suggestion to change the word conspiracy to agreement in the term conspiracy.
Yeah, gotcha.
Back
on.
Cool. Yeah, I assume that was like included in the.
Yeah.
That was the one I talked about.
Yeah, and there really was there were some other things defendant and marking
that.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, you know, USAO, I think. Anyway. There were a number of kind of, again, good points on we didn't raise them just because we.
So actually, I like complaining and putting like under 18 in the lead, you know, in language above a minor. Excuse me, and then you have under 18 or 12, whatever. I like that structure.
Okay, so keeping in names, you keep using minor in the naming, the titling convention, but in the statutory language, putting not using age. Minor, sticking with the clear age line.
Because I think, again, under that theory of if somebody doesn't know anything about it, they're looking at under 18.
That's right, 12. And goodness knows
it's easy if it's right there, rather than even have to double back to definitions of child or minor or something else.
Yeah. Anything else that jumps to people's minds that they want to talk about in terms of these drafting conventions or kind of layout? Let me open it up again to kind of, you know, anything else. We've got up to 20 minutes here still, or we can wrap up. Anything else at this point on the outstanding, set of draft recommendations to talk about together as a group? If not, again, we've got one more meeting on June 26th, 3 weeks. And that's another opportunity to, again, kind of address this current outstanding draft.
I'm not trying to turn this into a long substantive conversation, but the reasonable mistake of age defense, there were some changes made for the sexual abuse of a minor, which was better. But I know that was an improvement. But I noticed that there were still recklessness as to under 18 in other parts of the statute, like for enhancements for stalking and trafficking. And I think this actually suggested conduct didn't have some of that similar language. And I just briefly wanted to know if that was kind of intentional to only apply it to the statute, or if it just didn't make it past there.
Yes, it was. That was intentional, and so yes.
We'll submit more fulsome comments.
Great. Perfect. Other thoughts, little discrete things. Again, feel free to reach out, give us a call. Otherwise, this is all very helpful. And, Kevin's point about codification council is like, should be both like a reminder that, things are getting more and more real in terms of like, moving this to final recommendations that then the council, especially Kevin, has to like wrestle with, right? And like, details, all these little details, right? So the sooner we can iron them out, the sooner we can figure out what might be substantive differences versus like stuff that's, there are many like small decisions that could get changed that nobody's going to blink at.
We're maybe fighting over some words here or there, but like you've got some good samples that could be shared. They may not have wanted to talk to you 2 years ago, but it's coming.
Yeah, no.
And if they want to say it looks prettier this way.
That's right. And so we will work on having that conversation and seeing again what they make of, because this is, in some sense, doing a lot of work for them because they otherwise enactment and all this, like, this is a mess, right? Like, this happens every time. Every time they get a bill and have to go back, right? Like, once Title 22 is enacted, that simplifies things a whole lot, right? And, and again, previously in our, when we kind of, submitted the clean enactment, taking the current language, right, we found a number of issues there that were part of, that first set of, like, more technical type recommendations that we submitted on to the council. Those types of things, they get snagged on, too, and they're just, some of these old names, right? Like, so there's a number of things that we should be a positive force. The Codification Council should like this. So we'll try to capitalize on.
I mean, the concern is, just from a bureaucratic standpoint, they may feel that they have to do something, right? They have to do some work And just the word codification seems to be kind of in tension with what our process has been, because I kind of think of that as codification.
More substantive.
Yeah.
They can put it in the Google machine.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll call it a meeting then. Again, feel free to reach out. Thank you all, and we'll go ahead and turn off the recorders. I've got it, sorry. Let you...